And as God is my witness, can I get an amen? Do, do, do. Yes. Can I get a hallelujah? Dun, dun, dun. Yes. Can I get a fuck Jesus in the ass?
Is this going to be a recurring theme on every podcast we do, dude?
Silence, silence. Yes, it will be. You got to get retention one way or another. So strike people where it hits.
Well, I would say work on the hook then, okay? I won't say don't give it a day job this time round because I'm willing it's becoming a little bit cliched.
We'll try something new for the next one when that arrives, all right? But just this once, so I decided to push my luck a little bit. But for everyone who's listening, this is a podcast that's going to be a little different than the others because I have done it before. It was about blasphemy. I was actually somewhere else at the time, not in the UK. So if it sounded like there was weird background noise, I do apologize. But thankfully, we'll make it all up for it again. And here we have Bobatron here, as usual, presenting alongside me, Skinny Media.
Also, my YouTuber handle is Citizen Snips, just in case anyone's wondering. Well, why the fuck would you? I don't know.
Well, people should check it out, especially now that we're probably going to get even more traffic because I wanted to say before this program starts, thank you very kindly to the BBFC for making it possible to send a special kit along my way with a cup and a cahier and a pen and some pins and their book about the guidelines because I went to the We Are Family event and they shown cocaine bear as part of a focus group. So I wanted to get that out of the way for anyone who's listening, and I do apologize for mocking Jesus, but we are going to be talking about BLASPHEMY.
Well, very well spelled. I mean that is bang on money that. Really. And of course, it's not always a well, I suppose it's a reasonably easy word to spell, but not for everyone.
It's got the PH sound, which doesn't quite exist unless you know Greek.
Not
Philosophy.
exactly phonetic, is it?
No.
Which
It's
itself isn't a
philosophical.
phonetic word.
When you're looking at a photograph. Okay, I'll stop. But yes.
Psychological. Fuck, don't get started on that one.
Oh, yeah, well, that's blame the Greeks on that when they brought words, letters that don't sound like how they're pronounced. Spanish doesn't do that. They spell philosophy, filosofía, with
Yeah,
X.
but they don't pronounce the J's like that. You pronounce it like Y's, just like most of the Germanic languages do.
On Espanol, it's as an H sound, ha, guttural H, like in Dutch, they pronounce the G like a. Ha! Sorry.
Right, so how do they say Jenga in Spanish? Jenga, is it Jenga?
Anger.
Well, anyway, let's not get off topic.
I know, but that's the brilliance of these podcasts. You can sort of be a bit freeform about things, and no one will penalize you for it. If PewDiePie or Joe Rogan or Markiplier and all these idiots on YouTube can do that, so can I.
Well,
But
we're not
yeah.
spreading freaking COVID misinformation or saying the N-word, are we?
No, but I just wanted to mock them because they get all the
Because
love.
they're
We
cunts.
don't. Yes, they are. They're
Fuck a lot of them.
Jesus humping CUNTs. Right.
Yes, Mark, that's what they are. Anyway, should we get going?
Let's get a crack in. So, as always, we always start with what was your experience with blasphemy or mockery against God? It could be in school, it could be in movies or TV or music. Your choice.
Well, probably a bit of personal info anyway. I did mention this on the LGBTQ podcast, but it's more relevant here than anything else. I am an atheist. I don't think that's too much of a shock. A lot of people in the UK are right now. Not a huge fan of religion or the concept of religion as goes. My only response experience with blasphemy or one of my earliest ones was, of course, I would say something like, "Oh Jesus Christ!" or "God damn it!" as a kid. My mum would give me sort of like a very mild hit and say, "Stop blaspheming." Of course, my mum is the only member of my family that's actually religious. Me and both my brothers and my dad are all atheists. Yeah. Of course, it's only when I was about 14, when I was doing this project at school, we were sort of like, it's sort of, because it was coming up to the millennium, so we're doing a thing about the millennium and everything. And of course, we're looking at the Ten Commandments, and of course, one talking about which ones are law and which ones are just golden rules and everything. And we talked about the whole thou shalt not blaspheme one. I said, oh, that's just a golden rule, is it? And the RE teacher said, no, it's a law. And of course, I'm just thinking, it's against the law to blaspheme. That is fucking stupid. I thought that when I was 14. I thought it now. I still think it now. I mean, it is. What kind of anacrostic, outdated, superstitious bullshit is that? So, because to me, the idea, the concept of blasphemy is just making fun or insulting someone's imaginary friend. So the idea that can be controversial is just absolutely ridiculous. And, well, that's the beginning of all I've got to say about that. There'll be more to follow, but for now, over to you, Mark.
On my end, I come from a different experience. My father was more or less agnostic. He'll be in denial of this, but I don't think I've ever really seen him talk about church or God in a way, unless it's to be opportunistic. Now, my mother, she's a lot more faithful, probably even more so than me. I'm raised Catholic, although one could argue she's a bit lapsed because she's had a broken relationship with certain family members who are a bit brainwashed by the church. I'm trying to be a little vague here because they might be listening to this and they might give me a bit of a clip at the ear. But yeah, and on my end, I was raised Anglican, which has
same
certain
as I.
ties with no, the Catholic really. Church. But yeah.
The Anglican Church, the Church of England, is actually quite hostile to the Catholic Church. I kept thinking I was actually raised Anglican, but of course I wasn't. My mum is the only religious member. Didn't attend the local C of E church. She attended the local Congregational Church, which is just a generic Protestant church, which they, according to their local president, as it were, was actually linked to the Puritan movement of the 17th century. You know, the ones that got in the Mayflower to to go over to America, or ones that linked to Oliver Cromwell, which isn't a good look on them, I will admit, considering while they talk about how they're fleeing to avoid persecution, really they were fleeing to so they could persecute and create a religious police state like the Taliban, only Christian style.
And we're still seeing the remnants of that to this day with these abortion bans. People want to target gays and LGBT. And now they're even targeting women because, they wore skirts or something too revealing.
Well, like, I mean, saying that, it's almost like a cliche joke now to say, hey, America was found of religious nuts. Really? You'd never tell.
We're seeing some of it exported even within Europe's shores. Ireland, for a long time, was very Catholic.
Tried they were anti-Catholic.
In 1988, you could go to prison for it. Hungary is pretty right-wing as far as I'm concerned nowadays.
Well, I mean, loads of... unfortunately, Europe, you mean quite old, had a lot of leftover laws from the past. And a lot of these were blasphemy laws. In Britain, what's a mixed bag? Because we had England, Wales had the blasphemy law up until 2008. Scotland took until 2021 to get rid of theirs, and Northern Ireland has yet to abolish theirs, which means the United Kingdom is yet to be completely devoid of blasphemy laws. Because once again, Northern Ireland is holding us back, and of course, Germany still got theirs. Poland still got theirs. A lot of other countries, I mean, Ireland's abolished theirs. Most of Scandinavians have. And of course, well, France originally abolished their blasphemy law at the beginning of their revolution. As we explained back in the LGBT podcast, the militant sectors that came out of that made blasphemy an abolished concept. And while they brought it back after the Bourbon Restoration, after their second, well, Second Revolution were there. Third, is it Third Republic? The Second Republic. Oh, fuck, I can't remember now. No, no, yeah, Second Republic. No, it was the Third Republic. Oh my god, I have no idea. In the '80s, yeah, they got rid of it again. The problem is, though, due to the they stole some territory from Germany at one point. I think it was after World War II, maybe after World War I, Alsace-Lorraine region, which had some German legal code in there, which still contained a blasphemy law, which they only got rid of in 2015 or 2016 as a sign of solidarity after the Charlie Hebdo shooting.
I'm actually a little surprised it took that long, at least within that region and then neighbouring Deutschland, to still have such laws like that, even within the 21st century, considering how progressive on certain things that France and obviously Germany or Deutschland, Allemagne, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I won't call Germany that progressive. I won't call Germany that progressivist. They, as I mentioned, they in a two podcasts ago, they took until 2017 to legalize gay marriage. But yeah, I do see it. Germany still has its blasphemy law. But yeah, you'd be surprised with France, considering as a society and as a nation state, it is possibly the most secular in the world because of the 1789 revolution.
I would say so on my end, although based on personal experience, because I love France, it's my third
most
country. You will still see strong remnants of the Catholic order, even through the laws and also through the calendars and celebrations. I don't know very many people, even in America, who celebrate Assumption or Ascension and the Pentecost, but they do. It's government holidays there.
It's kind of weird because according to demographics and census and everything, something like 50% of France's population are atheists.
I would say so. When I did visit a church, I won't name which one particularly, it was mostly the older population that was inside. There was the event that they did have, there were a lot more younger people, but one could argue most of the young people that were in there as part of the religious congregation were Eastern Europeans who were immigrants of France, and probably like some of the African immigrants who have colonial ties to the country, and you know, they were sort of indoctrinated into Christianity, obviously, like in Cameroon and Benin. So now, more it's like the immigrants are now more religious than the native population. That has happened even in the UK.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, for all the right wing talk about like, oh, we're being swamped by alien religions, code word Muslim. Yeah, a lot of the most stringent, ardent Christians that come to us are probably from, from overseas. It's mostly the African nations, and a lot of our bishops right now are actually, well, African bishops in both the Anglican churches in Britain, or the Anglican and Presbyterian, let's not forget, because there's Anglican for England and Presbyterian for Scotland, but also, the Catholic churches in France.
Oh, absolutely. There, you'll be surprised. The conversation, racism always does exist, but it seems to kind of throw itself out of the window a little bit when you start talking about God, because they all pray to at least their version of a god.
Well, racism versus religious discrimination. Pick your poison.
Well, I would say from my experience, racism is more insidious, because you talk to, like, let's say people from Tennessee. You criticize about God in front of like some southern black folk, like I have, accidentally, they'll give you a stink eye. You wouldn't even want to do it with the white Southerners. So, you can't really... Let's just put it this way. Very traditionalist sort of cultural roles. Women in the kitchen, don't criticize God. If you're gay, get out of the house. And that's why I done the blasphemy one, because I knew it was going to really rustle some feathers. And the film that came to my mind when I think of blasphemy is both Kingsman: The Secret Service and Monty Python's Life of Brian.
Well, obviously the second one was going to be was an obvious one. That was going to be unavoidable. You're probably thinking of Kingsman: Secret Service because the action scene in the church. I can see why you would, but I don't really think it's an egregiously obvious one. But I think we could talk about Life of Brian, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. But I will interject on Kingsman just for a second because the circumstances of how I saw it will certainly make you laugh. Because I saw it in Tennessee. I was at university at the time. I saw it with my friend who we'd done the NC-17 podcast on. And I thought, oh shit, they're going to come for us. Or they're going to throw tomatoes or burn the screen down. But that none of that happened during
Well, I
that
think that was a
church massacre.
bit melodramatic there, Mark. I think it did get some backlash for that, but not to what we're thinking about. But to be honest, I'm probably going to have to. That's pretty all we can really say now about that one, because Life of Brian is the big cheese we got to talk about.
Oh,
Okay, it was a uncut double A and later 15. Well, uncut slash 15. Uncut AA slash 15 rating by the BBFC. Some councils did under pr after pressure by the likes of Mary Whitehouse, and I'm try not to descend into swearing rage when I mention her name. Others might have actually banned it, like the Exorcist, due to those reasons. But no, it was an uncut AA. Granted, it was because they replaced cunt with klutz because of it. But yeah, Uncut Double A was very controversial at the time. Obviously, the controversy now is kind of silly. Even most religious groups accept that. Was banned in Norway, apparently, and I think it was banned in Ireland.
Not surprising.
Yeah, not surprising. I mean, I heard at the time the IFCO, whatever it is, was quite militant about this, the Catholic Church having very strong control over Ireland. Yeah, you weren't going to get a film like that through in that country, as sad as it was to say, because you'd think in the 70s we were long past the Age of Enlightenment, but never mind. They even said in Sweden the film's so funny it was banned in Norway. Now, it did get quite a lot of, obviously, a lot of protesting and everything about. Was supposed blasphemy, even though the whole point was the mock blind faith and everything. And of course, the film's now an uncut 12A. Quite a strong 12A, I will admit. It's not just got like the six uses of fuck, but two full frontal nudity scenes. I guess the BBFC just think because it's a legacy film, it can be treated with a bit more leniency.
This is why I disagree a little bit on this one because I've seen Life of Brian. I actually got it on
So have I.
DVD from a Christian charity shop, or I think it was Cancer Research UK, because I got it for about 33p and I thought, wow. I got it in an area, weirdly enough, where the movie was actually banned from that council, so I was told. So having it was almost like, oh, I'm playing with fire. Uh-oh, the Met Police are going to come and arrest me for bringing obscene materials.
Right. I mean, obviously that wouldn't be the case nowadays. I mean, let's face it, the controversy surrounding Life of Brian has pretty much disappeared.
I absolutely there are more people likely to point the finger at that Netflix film with the children being sexualized called Cuties,
Cuties.
more so than watching people on a cross saying, always look on the
Not seen
bright
I've
side
not
of
seen cute yeah not seen cuties. I hear that actually that's misunderstood or taken out of context film, or I don't think its marketing does it any particular help favors, but that's not what we're here to talk about. On the subject of Life of Brian, there's always that infamous well, famous or infamous interview between the Pythons and those cardinals or priests or vicars, what the fuck they are, I have no idea. They're saying, oh, you've got your 30 pieces of silver. And of course, John Cleese, back long before he went completely off the rails and has just become this old man shouting at clouds that he is today, was talking to him basically about how about 400 years ago we would have been burnt for this. I like to think that we've made some progress in that time. And he's right, because again, he's like, for all the t talk about how much backlash we got. They never had to go into hiding, which brings me to the next point, because 10 years after that, We had the Salman Rushdie affair.
The Satanic Verses, one of the most controversial books, if not, well, that's debatable. But yeah, they actually issued a fatwa against him, threatening for his death, but yet to go in hiding. And ultimately, he was attempted assassinated just a year or two ago. And to where he now has to wear like a black eyeglass because the injury that he received was too grave. But he's still alive, but that's disturbing.
It is disturbing, and still it is horrible that they still, the Muslim world, or members of the Muslim world, still held that, attitude towards him. It was gobsmacking enough to people who were old enough to, at the time, who wanted to be aware. Obviously, I was 4 years old at the time, so I don't. You weren't born at the time. That there was people in the world who thought that you should die for writing a book because it was blasphemous. Of course, I don't know if you remember. You should be old enough to remember. I definitely remember that incident regarding those Danish cartoons in 2006, 2005, 2006. And
I wasn't really watching the news that much, but I did hear it past the fact, and I thought, oh, people could be killed just for doing something like that. But then Charlie Hebdo painted a pretty picture, and then the South Park controversy about, oh, they're going to show the Prophet Muhammad, episode 201 or something. But then they ultimately didn't. They dressed up as Santa Claus. That caused a shitstorm.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, if you even watched the, listen to the commentary on the second part of those two episodes, South Park episodes, the rest of it, just the second half of it, is just completely beeped out because it's not so much them, but the network so shit scared of Islamic extremist reprisals that we completely just self-censored. I mean, it's not technically self-censorship, but I mean, seriously, I mean, it does sort of like, it does sort of hammer it home. It's just like, my God, we're living in the 21st century, and there's this large portion of the world's population that still think that not only should blasphemy not be allowed, but you should die for it. I mean, Bill Maher is a cunt, and I've really hated him. I mean, I used to like the guy, but he's become such a wanker of nowadays. I've always liked his view on religion, but he doesn't really talk about it too much. He's too busy bitching about wokeness. But yeah, I did come to a regretful conclusion one time when he made his critiques of Islam, an Islamic society. He was saying this isn't normal. We're in the 21st century, and this society, this culture, this civilization, or whatever you want to call it, still lives in this medieval mindset where blasphemy and sacrilege and heresy and just religious offences are things that you should die for. I mean, it's just not normal. And while he probably can be a bit reductive and a bit myopic with his viewpoints on this, and I do really think that he is, there's at least a kernel of truth in it. I mean, no one, you look at every other religion in the world, and they'll take umbrage when you make blasphemous or offensive comments about their belief system or poke fun at their deities or their prophets or religious figureheads. But you don't have to go into hiding for it.
No, I think that's too cruel on many people's parts to try to penalize someone simply because you criticize a deity. And whether you're an atheist or agnostic, I do live in a sense of fear that if you do say the wrong thing, and this can go for people on the left as well, it's not just a right-wing issue to worry about cancel culture, you feel like you're going to be targeted, reprised, and condemned. At any given minute, if the courts will permit it, Ron DeSantis and all these right-wing governors in the US will find ways to bring back a lot of these sort of hardline blasphemy laws back in the books, so if they haven't already, where if you criticize, let's say, Southern Baptists or the Evangelical Church, you will be sent to prison or community service or forced into exile in a liberal Democrat state. So, yeah, that's my fear.
That's not a punishment.
Oh, no, not at all. Not for me. But I lived in California, but that's a different beast. But I'm worried we're slowly getting back to the tide. If it's not the gays are targeting, or the women, or the ethnic minorities and migrants, they'll target intellectuals, communists, socialists, people who criticize the government. Anyone anti-government is not some sort of right-wing libertarian type. There are a lot of left-wing people who are anti-government as well.
Anarchists.
Look at that too, right here.
Yeah, anarchists or anarcho-syndicalists or anarcho-communists. I should pronounce that properly. Anarcho-syndicalists or anarcho-communists. Yeah, we're very much are that. And we actually advocate the abolition of the state in general. But that's political, and that's another discussion for another time. We are discussing blasphemy here.
I know we did get a little carried away on some of these issues there, but it all does pertain to censorship one way or another. My experiences, the only film that I'm aware of that was prosecuted on blasphemy charges was The Visions of Ecstasy, which...
I did want to bring that up, but you've done it for me. Yeah, I mean, the guy who made it,
Nigel Wingrove.
Nigel Wingrove. I could have just Googled that as we were talking, but I didn't want to get distracted. Yeah, I mean, he admitted that this is based on something that actually happened. And, of course, he just basically thought James Furman was kowtowing to the mob, because it came out at the right time as
Like a prayer and last sentence of Christ.
Yeah, that's what we're going to get to, and the satanic verses. And, of course, blasphemy was a thing. And, of course, yeah, it was... Because now, ever since the blasphemy law has been repealed, we can now own Visions of Ecstasy. I haven't watched it, so I don't know what it's about. I don't know if it deserves its 18 rating. It probably doesn't. But of course, should probably get into, and I haven't actually seen this film, so I'm not sure how well I can discuss it, The Last Temptation of Christ.
Well, actually, let me interject for a sec, because I've seen Visions. It's on YouTube for free, weirdly enough. There's no dialogue, but I understand why it's an 18, because it does depict a very eroticized encounter with Christ, or so it appears, and there's sort of a lot of sexualized imagery you even see full frontal, but it's actually quite tasteful. It is pornographic, but it's certainly not as crass as something like Nine Songs or Nymphomaniac, but I can see why a lot of people were really offended by it. But for me, I found Kingsman more shocking than Visions, because there's the violence aspect, and also you hear racial slurs. He talks about abortion clinics and Jews and that sort of thing. Visions, all you see is sex.
Context wise, I think we can all sort of get behind what exactly that scene was, in you know, what it was sending a send up of, and what it was mocking and satirizing. So let's not get too
American audiences who listen to this as well, and you know how Americans are, they're all hung up on Christ.
Well, they were the people that were being mocked, so I mean, yeah, but
and it's still all over there.
But anywho, shall we talk about The Last Temptation of Christ?
Yep, let's do it.
Okay, I haven't seen it, so I don't know much about it. I do know that the BBFC was contemplating banning it reason for blasphemy. He had some some clergymen from the Church of England in to analyse it, and they distinctly said, no, it's fine. So that's why he passed it, albeit with an 18. But again, I haven't seen it. It's now a 15, I think. Yeah, but what surprised me most about this, because you know what I said earlier about the tendency for Islamic reprisals in the face of blasphemy, this film actually did get a Christian reprisal for it, as in a theatre was firebombed for showing it, and that's surprising enough in of itself. Well, I guess it wouldn't be too surprising a few centuries back, but in the modern era, it kind of is. But what's ultra surprising is, whereas you'd think it happened in the Southern Baptist states in America, or somewhere, maybe Poland, maybe, or Ireland, it happened in fucking France. A place where you just expect, Christian militant Christianity or Christian fundamentalism just to be a completely product of a bygone era ever since, post 1789.
I'm a little surprised by that too, considering, like you said, France is quite secular, but France is also home to a group called Promouvoir. Promouvoir is like hardline social Catholic organization. You'll see a lot of Italians who've got connections with a sort of organization like this. I could go on about Italy, but France, for instance, had this group that likes to go after films that they think are too inappropriate. And they usually go for like the 12 and 16 stuff. They even had a beef with Sausage Party and Blue is the Warmest Color. I'm sure they had a problem with La Dernière Tentation de Jésus-Christ, its French title. So, yeah, that's really bizarre.
Well, yeah, it is bizarre. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what more I can really add about The Last Temptation of Christ, because I haven't actually seen it. I mean, I know as a film, it's about Christ considering giving up his prophethood and settling down the life of Mary Magdalene, but only choosing not to. And a lot of people have considered that to be blasphemous, but oh, fucking no. I need to actually watch the film before I can actually make a comment on it. But which is going to show how religious nuts can be stood up for anything. Of course, well,
they targeted recently Benedetta, which was an 18 certificate Paul Verhoeven film, had some really questionable material, including lesbian sex and the stigmata.
Awesome. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love, as you can probably tell by listening to me, well, by how we speak and my atheism, and I said I don't really like religion particularly much. So I've always had a thing for riling up religious people because, well, they've kind of got under my skin for most of my life. Yeah, but like I need to see Benedetta as well, because I just need to see what that's like and everything. There's also the issue of, and I can't believe we haven't brought this up earlier because of who it involves, but that poem, The Love That Dare Not Speak Its Name.
I don't know who you're talking about.
What? Oh, dude. You know, it was a poem published by Gay News back in the 1970s.
Oh, shit. Wait, this is the one that Mary Whitehouse had the beef with.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry to everyone who's listening. I was not aware of this, even though I talked about it on last week or hinted. But go on.
I don't know what to add, really. I mean, I saw the interview she'd been having and everything, and she was, we were saying, I mean, blasphemy is everywhere, and I'm not looking for blasphemy. If this isn't blasphemy, I don't know what is. It's like, and no one sort of thought to say to her, yeah, and so fucking what? It shouldn't be because this is back when the blasphemy law was in full swing, and of course, yeah, this is the first time in God knows how long that they had, I think like 50-odd years, that there'd have been a prosecution for blasphemy, and or at least a successful one. And when most people at the time thought the blasphemy law was a dead letter law, turns out that it could be prosecuted, and she decided to go ahead with it. But I'm just thinking, it's like, dude, you know there's a law against blasphemy, and the first thought in your mind isn't, well, that's stupid, how quickly can we get rid of that? Because again, it's like, no one thought to say to her, hey, Mary, it shouldn't be illegal, and it's certainly not immoral to insult or make fun of your imaginary friend. I mean, but no, I mean, she sued them. She was successful. They were sued. They had to pay the fines and were bankrupted. And it wasn't until 2008 when the sodding blasphemy law was actually abolished that they actually got to read that read that poem publicly. And I also want to add, while I'm saying this, back in 1911, our then Prime Minister, Herbert Asquith, yes, that was his name, he's a guy who sent us into World War One, actually tried to get the freaking blasphemy law abolished. He just couldn't. It was like, God, imagine if he was successful, because Mary Whitehouse was in nappies back then. Just the following 70 years would have... Sorry, make that 90 plus fucking years would have just been so different if he could just have got the fucking blasphemy law abolished. I mean, sorry, going on a bit of rant there, but fuck me.
No, but you got a point there, because had they abolished it a lot earlier, you probably wouldn't have had some of the issues that Britain sometimes now likes to say, oh, we regret doing that, but do they? I mean, one could argue, and I'm sorry to offend my Ulster friends, the Troubles. Do you think that would have happened had the blasphemy law and the way they treated the Irish, you know, was abolished?
I don't... Well, it could have been, but bearing in mind, the blasphemy law... Mind you, it might not have been the case back then, but...
The blasphemy law
that was abolished in 2008 only applied to England and Wales. Like, as I mentioned, Scotland took until 2021 to abolish its one, and of course... Northern Ireland still hasn't abolished its one, but I don't know of how devolved they were back then. So maybe if it did get it abolished back in 1911, it may have affected, maybe, well, not just the, well, actually, not just Northern Ireland, maybe it may affect the whole UK, but back then, that was before Irish independence. So, of course, Ireland was part of the UK. So, I mean, it may have just been abolished all throughout Great Britain and Ireland.
Because I've got a few theories on that on my end, because. Yeah, you know, they always say, oh, Catholic versus Protestant in Ulster, and a lot of that still remains true. And if they had abolished that law, you probably would have seen maybe a little bit more calm in the water, instead of all this violence based on territory and religion that we've seen up until the 90s with the Good Friday Agreement and so on and so forth.
Very possibly, because, I mean, the blasphemy law in Britain normally was... in Wales, anyway, whatever, is did mention it only applied to the Church of England. So, of course, to non-COV, non-Anglican sects, it didn't really apply, although it probably did extend to Christians in general. But I mean, I think to Catholics, it might have not been applied and not been enforceable. And let's face it, Britain is one of the few first world countries that still doesn't have a separation of church and state. I mean, the monarch, who now King Charles and was for our Queen Elizabeth, isn't just a head of state, she's a head of Church of England. Essentially, she's their pope. And we've even got 26 seats in the House of Lords called for the Lords Spiritual, which are basically bishops and Church of England. And of course, that's always... I mean, I think that's so fucking bang out of order and so anachronistic. It's just so wrong. But it's just been like... It sends like a nasty message to not just the non-Christians, but the non-Anglicans, that they're almost second-class citizens. And I can't help but thinking that's always been like a case that's been enforced upon Catholics in Northern Ireland. And I don't think it pretty much is a fact, hence why they've historically been treated so badly in Ulster. Hence, and the Protestant loyalist DUP types have been such utter cunts.
Indeed, there. Pardon the offensive dialect, but yes, some of that probably would have waned a little bit had they sorted themselves out. But we can only wish and pray for things in the past there. But yes, religion is still quite a tough topic, even in the UK, especially when you consider the Ulster question because of the territorial issues. But then also, as we have seen in recent years, Islamophobia has always been a riling problem because that's... the far right is also fighting against, yes, and I'm sorry to say this, the far right, because most of the people who harbour the strongest type of views on Islam and Sharia law tend to have themselves very conservative leanings, and they're battling another far right group, even though it's a bit of an unusual one because hardline Muslims will generally vote Labour anyways, because of poverty and racism. But you watch out white working class. So it's a bit of a weird...
And George Galloway has freaking pandered to that hardline Muslim like, fuck!
I've seen his RT or Russia Today views. I think he might have sold himself out a little bit. Putin's paying his pocket?
Yep, pretty much. Know. What an absolute sack of shit that he is. But let's not get hung up in details. You are right. I mean, I was going to bring up, because I was a big fan of, I don't know if you ever followed it or aware of, the New Atheist movement of the mid to late 2000s and early 2010s.
Not too familiar. I'm familiar with Richard Dawkins' wave of atheism, and then also the
that's
more
what it is. That's what it is.
Elements no, like Mark. Sargon Picard.
Yeah, no, well, no, not him. He's a cunt. No, that's what it is. New atheism was the likes of Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, and on a lesser known scale, Daniel Dennett. You had Richard Dawkins's book, The God Delusion. I own it and I've read it. I like it. I've been a fan of Richard Dawkins for quite some time. I've fallen a bit out of favor with me recently due to some rather thoughtless comments he's made recently. You had Christopher Hitchens and his book, God Is Not Dead. I don't mind Christopher Hitchens too much, but I wish he didn't support the Iraq War and wasn't such a Seppo loving neocon. So don't want to speak ill of the dead, but fuck him a little bit. There's Sam Harris with his book End of Faith and Letter to a Christian Nation, and I really don't like Sam Harris because he is a complete right-wing son of a bitch and may as well be an alt-right propagandist now. Even though he says he doesn't like Trump and everything, he's courted too many of his types, and fuck him. I don't know too much about Daniel Dennett, so I can't comment. But no, I mean, I do think that for all its problems a new atheist community had, it has done a lot to encourage people that it's okay to be an atheist. It's okay to be an agnostic. It's okay to not be religious. We don't have to do something just because religion says so, and we can move away from that sort of thing. They probably helped with the whole abolition of the blasphemy law in 2008. I don't know. I'm just spitballing there. But they have done a lot to help secularize society and not make blasphemy such a contentious issue, as much as religious theocrats and the far right have tried to fight back and re-weaponize Christianity, although a lot of far right, like Andrew Tate, are trying to use Islam for it as well. So make of that what you will.
No, but it's true. People have different means and ends to try to support blasphemy or its abolition, depending on who you talk to. Which leads to another question regarding the Christian left and the Christian right, because I can tell you right now, with the inflation crisis that's going on right now, you'll see more people turning to God. And many of those places that they worship for God are the food banks, because the churches are largely responsible for doing these sort of services to help out refugees or single parents and their families try to at least survive in economic times. So I'm seeing we may be going back to a more sort of Christian era on my end, but it may not be for what you think it is, but for the charitable elements. I don't know. That's just a theory. Call me wrong.
Religion can do a lot for charity. I'll admit you don't have to be religious to be charitable. But yeah, I mean, and a lot of religious people aren't charitable. I mean, how much charity did Jerry Falwell or Pat Robson ever do? I don't think they did much whilst preaching for their mega churches and everything. Sometimes it may just be your own moral compass and everything, and you might just be seeing it through your religion. Where was I going with that? I don't know. Yeah, but I don't think religion and altruism are necessarily linked. I mean, I think morality is intrinsic to human nature. But yeah, I mean, make of what you do. I mean, the Church of England is pretty mild. I mean, one of the most famous Archbishop of Canterbury's in recent years, and definitely my lifetime, was Rowan Williams. And are you familiar with a man?
No, I'm afraid not.
Well, he was, when did he stop being Archbishop? I can't remember. But he was pretty much one of the most liberal Archbishop. I mean, most of the church being there, I mean, they've always spoken out against teaching creationism in schools and everything. And they're very okay with gay marriage. I mean, and Rowan Williams has like spoken out against the Iraq War. He's spoken in favor of gay marriage. He's spoken out against LGBT conversion therapy and everything. And generally speaking, he's quite good. He's no ignorant Bible thumper. He's a very educated man, much like I like to think we are. No, he's way better educated than we are. let's not beat about the bush there. But But yeah, and I think he's found, he thinks that the Life of Brian was a perfectly okay film. Actually, no stunt circumstance should have been banned. So he's cleaned his side of a road. Let's kept his house in check. Let's put it that way. Now, speaking of films or books or anything that we consider blasphemous, and you've spoken about this film a lot, Mark. I can't believe I'm taking this long to mention it. The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, don't give me a nightmare about that whipping scene. I know some people on the internet, I've spied on chat rooms and forums, and they say that scene kind of turned them on. But what movie were you watching?
Didn't turn me on. I mean,
that scene was horrifying. I kind of shook me when I first saw that.
You would have been 13 when the film was released, weren't you?
Yes, I mean, I was legal to see it, but
You could have seen it with your parents if you're under 12, but that's neither here nor there right now. I was 21 when it came out, so there was no issues with me regarding it. And of course, there was nothing going to shock me too much. Although, here's one film. I had just actually read the book, actually, just earlier that year before it came out. And of course, I was thinking, whoa, man, this is hella cryptic. It's one of those books which you knew... read when you're quite young and everything. It just blows your mind, man. Obviously, looking back at now, it is fucking stupid, and it is based on such utter bollocks. Well, maybe it's possible Jesus or Yeshua of Nazareth, I mean, did sync up with Mary Magdalene and have a kid, but if they did, I mean, I think they have more than one descendant nowadays. I don't know if Mary Magdalene was even a real person, and I don't think Jesus, as written in the Gospels, was a real person either. I think we've established the historical figure Yeshua of Nazareth did exist, but I don't think he was what was read in the Gospels, and he's probably not born in a manger, wasn't born in Bethlehem, probably born in Nazareth. I don't give a fuck about any of that anyway. But yeah, I mean, the film's... the book is bollocks. The film is bollocks. I mean, Dan Brown's a shitty writer, and oh god, a stretched Jaguar that Lee Teabing person drove. I mean, I wouldn't say Dan Brown's a shittier writer as a Stephanie Meyer who wrote Twilight, but he's on the level. I mean, I remember actually one of the jokes that Salman Rushdie, harking back to that, said everyone should be allowed to write, even Dan Brown. Not encouraged, but definitely allowed.
Well, I mean, he knows his market and he thrives upon it. It's like James Patterson always makes those crime thrillers, or Clive Cussler, he does the same thing too. They follow the niche, and Clive Barker, he's very much known for that sort of weird body horror shit that's got religious imagery mixed with some sort of LGBT sadomasochistic element. So Dan Brown exploited that market of sort of conspiracy religious thriller, and he went along with it. But on the controversy end, it was not that whipping scene that scared people. It was actually the general element of the novel and the film itself, questioning the origins of Christ and the connections with the Knights Templar and several of these shadowy organizations. Actually, through a big conspiracy theory about the Last Supper.
No, bunch of fucking tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy kookish bullshit at the time, but seeing as at the time I was going for a 9/11 truther phase, and I actually was a fan of Alex Jones, don't worry, I'm not anymore.
Hey, I used to be a fan of him too.
Yeah, we can get onto that another time. It's not exactly a tall order that I would have bought into this bullshit as well. But another thing about the mythos and plot of premise behind The Da Vinci Code is, it's actually very derivative. It's not original. Because another film that's been charged for blasphemy, been controversial for blasphemy, Kevin Smith's Dogma.
I actually remember seeing that in America. Oh, I'm going to go to a right-wing jail and have to work for 20 cents an hour for watching some blasphemous tripe. But yes, it's a 15 certificate, and the BBC.
His first 15, his first film had to get a 15 certificate to begin with, actually. Obviously, most of his films are now being dropped to 15, and rightfully so. Nothing he did deserve an 18. Nothing at all.
I'll reserve that for Zach and Miri. That was pretty adult, but yeah.
He did that, didn't he? Well, anyway. Oh, yeah, and there's Red States. Well, bollocks to that, anyway.
But that's blasphemous, too. We could talk about Red State, but let's talk about Dogma.
No, let's talk about Dogma, because, again, that involves, like, the main character being the great-great-grand-niece, granted, of Jesus Christ. So, yeah, Dan Brown, you weren't particularly original there. And in both cases, it's just bollocks, because if Jesus was going to have any descendants, he'd have slightly more than one descendant. Otherwise, he'd have webbed feet. I'll give you as much time as you need to think about that and fully understand it. But it's quite funny, actually, because you know how I mentioned earlier that it's generally when it's Muslims that people have to go into hiding or get death threats for when it's the charge of blasphemy arises. Well, apparently, Kevin Smith said he got death threats for this film from militant Christians. So just like he was a doctor that performed abortions. So, yeah, that.
Well, many of them are still getting death threats from the right-wing evangelical lobby. But yeah, the fact that you could target someone who makes stoner movies where people say, "I'm not supposed to be here today, dude," and snooze to the boobs with his silent
This film involved a shit demon.
I know, it's a bit overblown in all fairness, in the same way that people complaining about Kingsman was overblown. But beside the point, it is... Well, back then, you had to be quite careful what you show in the 15, but there was a marked difference because now they've introduced guidelines.
James Furman had fucked off by that point. So, I mean, it's not much not very particularly surprising that they had chillaxed somewhat.
Well, that's what I said, because Robin Duvall was the director at the time, and they started dialing down a few things, and you can now get away with a bit more offensive stuff in a 15. Like back then, because there was even that head exploding scene and the blasphemous jokes, lost F words. There was maybe, it's been a while since I've seen it, but that's about as much as I could remember.
I
don't think it's as offensive as, let's say, Life of Brian or Kingsman.
I don't think Life of Brian's that offensive anyway. I mean, remember, I was watching. Last time I watched Dogma was back in 2006, actually. I mean, exactly. I was watching it on VHS, of all things, because we had it in VHS. I was watching actually with my my Christian mum, who I mentioned earlier. And she said that, bad language aside, she actually found the message of the film to be quite heartwarming.
Oh, blimey. That's
hilarious. When you actually watch the film... and actually pay attention to what's being said and what's going on, it's actually not that disparaging of religion. It's disparaging towards the religious bigots and all the fuckwits who basically just do horrible things in the name of their religion. But actually, it paints the religion itself and the theology in quite a nice manner. It's certainly not a manner I would ever... It's certainly more charitable than I'd ever paint religion in. I mean... I've always been very militantly anti-religion, and whereas a lot of people say that the bigots basically misconstrue religion or politicize it for their vociferous ends, I've always been of a mindset as like, no, I just think the religious nuts, violently religious people take the scriptures of both Christianity and Islam and Judaism much more seriously, because when you read the books, due to them being quite old and quite ancient, there's a lot of outdated morality in them. And if these people think it's the exact word of God, they're not going to differentiate between what's relevant now and what isn't then. They're just going to think it all has to be followed.
No, but you're making a good point there, because you've got more practical Christians like myself who will at least try to be respectful within societies with confines, and then those who interpret it so strictly to try to conceal up something. It is to be said that a lot of the people who harbour the most extreme views on religion generally come from a broken background themselves, and when they feel all is lost, they turn to some sort of tech and philosophy just so they can feel better about themselves. It's one of the reasons why they always prey on poor people to turn to God. I mean, the South in the US, because I've been to Tennessee and I've been to Texas, a lot of poverty, very neoliberal.
Well, it's been
this way to get them through their heads. Tell them about Deuteronomy or Job 38:11. Get people talking.
It's not just the poor and everything. And yeah, you know, you say there's a lot of poverty in the South because they have been really fucked by neoliberalism over the past 40 odd years or anything. But it's not so much for poor, but rather it's the poorly educated. And because if you're quite poor and you don't have a lot of money, you probably can't afford to send your kids, your parents can't afford to send you to school, you can't afford a good education. And more often than not, your parents will just pull you out of school once you finish the mandatory and get you to do whatever they're doing, everything, get to go down the mine with everything. So you won't have a chance. So yeah, you probably won't have an opportunity to get a decent education, and you will probably, due to no fault of your own, grow up to be quite, I hate to say the word, ignorant. And of course, these religious nuts, yeah, they will prey upon the ignorant and the uneducated and the disenfranchised. The Catholic Church is incredibly guilty of this.
I mean, you have to look at it on some level. The political, cultural, and economic lifestyles, let's say, like Eastern Europe. Under Soviet communism, they couldn't do this, they couldn't do that. Very restrictive laws and environment.
And of course, they were and of course, for communist or at least Marxist-Leninist regimes, and we only say Marxist-Leninist to really define what exactly Soviet communism actually was militantly atheist. I mean, they technically allowed you to be religious, but it was highly frowned upon.
No, you're right there. I'm just saying in the context of, you know, where you meet people who are, you know, they're white-looking, but they're European. Very likely, probably Eastern European or Italian, who was very God and very faithful. And I think a lot of that has to do with the political and social history of those countries. And outside of those demographics, usually people who tend to turn to God quite rapidly, like born-agains, usually tend to also be from broken home. Like you said, you know, many people who are victims of rape and sexual assault sometimes will turn to God to find some sense of purpose, so it stops them from drinking themselves to death or hanging or shooting themselves, blowing their heads off.
Yeah, well, what gets people through the through day and everything? I mean, you're talking about like alcoholism. I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous is criticized for being a religious cult that is very churchy. And yeah, I mean, they say that they're only being a metaphorical with God, and your God could be anything. But when you actually get in there and you get into the 12 step, it is, at least from what I've heard, yeah, almost like a Christian cult that tends to sort of prey upon people's vulnerabilities to strip them of their individuality and everything. I mean, that's just, I'm not sure if that's really relevant to blasphemy and everything, but it is kind of part of the bigger scope of it and everything.
No, it is. Everything sort of ties itself together. We talk about blasphemy in the context of like film classification and TV and media. And, you know, music, well, I know we kind of lost ourselves a little bit on this, but I think music, it's always been the metal bands that have been a key.
Well, yeah, I just...
But I'm not going to, because I've talked about it two times.
Oh, no, dude, I mean, Mark, well, that's a bit unprofessional to say dude, like that. I had just thought about it, because it was something I wanted to go to, because there's a lot of other things that have been charged for blasphemy that in the past, but in terms of music, I just had this. Have you heard of a metal band called Cradle of Filth?
I remember seeing some of their music videos on Kerrang. I just can't remember any of their song titles.
Their Ghost in the Fog, Nymphetamine, Gilded Cunt, all that stuff. They have come into hot water at a time where, in some places, I can't remember where, fans of theirs have been arrested for wearing one of their T-shirts that said, "Jesus is a cunt." And that makes me giggle.
And this band is American, right?
No, they're British. They're from Ipswich, I think. Or so it's Suffolk. I was going to go, no, they are British, though. I think they're from Ipswich.
I wouldn't. Even I'm not that bold. I would never wear a shirt that says Jesus is a C word. Bad enough, I wear an
By
Elf
C word, do you
Fleet
mean
shirt.
cunt?
Yeah, I've got female
Suffolk,
family
Suffolk.
members.
They're from Suffolk. No, obviously, it's like when every metal band would try to do something anti-Christian, something blasphemous Christian, and something to rile up Christian conservatives to like get them, just to get some bloody get controversy, get reckon, drum up publicity, rile up the Christian conservatives. As I say, there's no such thing as bad press. Rolling Stones did it quite early on with Symphony for the Devil, of course. Then, bands like Slayer come out and they're like just having pentagrams and everything, and it's all a bit Halloween and everything, but it does well, I mean, it does the trick. And of course, with the rise of religious rights in America, it pissed them off so much. I mean, people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell would and also most of the members of the Republican Party would all scream blue murder over them, scream bloody murderer about it. And of course, people would just go buy more and more of it. But of course, you've got to keep upping the ante each and every time, because you look back at Iron Maiden 666, the number of a beast, and it's like, my God, it is just something out of a ha it is just, well, Halloween. No one's going to take that seriously. By the time the 90s were around and Cradle of Filth were, or maybe it was even the late 90s or even early 2000s, Cradle of Filth really had to up the ante. Where do you go other than say Jesus is a cunt?
I don't think you could go any further than that. I
I
mean,
was when I was writing, I was in my uni years when I was 19, 20 something. I wanted to I was contemplating starting a metal band myself. I never did, and everything. I didn't have talent to do it. But I was writing all the lyrics to all these songs and everything. And one of the songs I had in mind was called "God is a Cunt." And basically, what the lyrics. I just made sure to insult every religion I could think of by basically calling the deities, the prophets, and the religious figureheads of every religion I could think of cunts.
wow, you got you don't you know you. Sorry, my words are tied. You don't mean to tell me in a previous life you were Peter Cook or Dudley Moore? I know you're Jason Statham in another life, but you weren't Dudley and Peter at one point in time because they made jokes just like that on their little film that they did called Derek and Clive Get the Horn, which was banned, mind you, from cinema release, and they even tried banning it through VHS, and it had to be delayed for about 10 or so years. And they
Well,
would make jokes about, yeah, you fucking love it. It's a cunt. Yeah, or Chateau in the cunt right here.
I don't
Jesus.
follow much of them. Many of my favorite comedians are religions. Of course, you got George Carlin, you got Billy Connolly. Nowadays, you've got modern ones like you've got Jimmy Carr, Frankie Boyle, Marcus Brigstocke. I was a fan of Bill Maher until recently because he's a twat now. Dara O'Brien and Ed Byrne, of course, atheists, but they don't talk about it quite so much. And there's Russell Howard, I think, is an atheist and agnostic, but again, he doesn't talk about it quite so much. Although I remember one time making the joke, of course, someone in UKIP saying, "We can't, the Bible says homosexuality is immoral." He says, "Who cares? The Bible says a bush can talk. Like, do we really want to take our freaking guidance from a book like that?" Getting a lot off the thread. I mean, yeah, I obviously I was going for a bit of an edgelord phase, and I just wanted to do anything that could be seen as edgy. And I've always had it in for religion, mainly just because I was pissed off at my teachers at school trying to force it down my throat, so I would just do anything just to fight back. And of course, that's probably why I lapped up the new atheist movement as much as I can. And I still stand by a lot of what he said. But I mean, a lot of people. But in terms of, I'm just trying to think what else in terms of blasphemous that's been controversial recently. There
Well, I
was
know.
that one film that called The Pope Must Die, which again got Mary Whitehouse's knickers in a twist, and which is always a good thing, or was always a good thing because she's dead and rotten piss for her. But yeah, I mean, the Pope didn't actually die, but she was obviously really pissed off about that. So there was that. And of course, there was that Innocence of Muslims that came out on YouTube 11 years ago. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. It caused a shitstorm. And Sam said it led. If it wasn't for that video, you wouldn't have had the Benghazi invasion in Libya as a result. Well, conspiracy theory, some of them said, but yeah, that caused a shitstorm. And then Charlie Hebdo happened, and I thought, oh dear, because I actually interviewed a filmmaker who was very close to the Charlie Hebdo writers. His name is Jean-Paul Varens. He used to work for the publication was known as Arakiri. Sorry about the French accent, but that's how it sounds like en français. And yes, it did upset and traumatize him. I even was actually more cutthroat than he was, because French people can be quite Islamophobic.
But I was just really? Well, any more than British people?
Well, France has had issues with Muslims ever since the days of Algeria, and using them as immigrants to fix their economy after the Second World War. Which is why you see so many people with names like Farouk and Hadid and Amadou in like the Parisian and Marseille suburbs. But that's just a side point. British people, even Americans are maybe slightly indifferent, but they hate them nonetheless. But that's beside the point. And he was quite upset about it. And so as I actually even said, because they shone the Prophet Muhammad. On the previous video that I did about blasphemy, I actually showed an illustration of the Muhammad, the prophet.
And you should.
For the first 5 seconds, I thought, you know, because I'm always suicidal anyways. I was just thinking, hey, if they want to kill me, go right ahead. You're going to make me a martyr.
Well, yeah, I mean, oh, yeah, that reminds me. Yeah, because they did that with Theo van Gogh. Did you hear about him?
He was assassinated by Islamic extremists. He was Dutch.
Van Gogh, of course he was. I mean, he was related to Vincent van Gogh. But no, he did, I was saying it was Fitna. He made a rather unflattering film about Islam. And of course, yeah, he was murdered and everything. And of course, to anyone who hates the content of blasphemy laws, and to, of course, Islamophobes anywhere who don't give a fuck about secularism, but hey, love to bash immigrants and brown people and everything. He became a martyr, ironically. I don't know how much Charlie Hebdo really cared for him, because I think he was a bit right wing, probably a bit racist, at least I might have heard. But yeah, he shouldn't have been killed. Which of course reminds me, shortly after Charlie Hebdo. I can't remember the name of the institute, but have you heard of Pamela Geller?
No.
Well, anyway, right-wing American bitch. She did a Draw Muhammad Institute and everything, and it got subject, obviously, because she wanted to spread Islamophobia, it got attempted attack by an Islamic extremist, and someone was asking one of the head of Charlie Hebdo, well, do you feel solidarity with them? Which he said, no, because we're doing it for completely different reasons. We're doing it to defend secularism and free speech and everything, to tell religious theocrats, you cannot bully people into silence. You cannot force people to just to respect your outdated customs and everything. They're just doing it to be racist and everything, like the likes of Le Pen would do. And it's not like if all the Muslims in France converted to Catholicism overnight, the likes of Le Pen would give two shits. They would still want to get rid of them anyway.
Exactly, because they got funny names, or they cover their heads.
And they're brown.
Oh, yes, as always. Well, they try to pit one group against another, where there's been cases of whites using blacks to target Muslims and Asians to target blacks and vice versa. I hate that happens. Party fight. It's like, well, I could go on about this.
Well, we can.
Jews versus Muslims. Muslims versus Jews. Gays versus Muslims. This is where I've gotten in a bit of trouble with Tom on a few occasions about this, with intersectionality having it backfire in the weirdest kind of ways, because you would think they all sort of align one way or another because they're left wing, but they're actually not.
Well, that's why you need to, but that's kind of more why they need to try harder and everything, because again, there are like, you know, certain points. I mean, obviously you've got to tackle racism and you've got to tackle homophobia, and of course a lot of, and you've got to tackle Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, or all these bigotries towards marginalized groups. But of course some people, these marginalized groups, might have bigoted attitudes towards other marginalized groups, and it's not exactly a secret that in the Islamic community there's a lot of homophobia. I think there might be a lot of radical Jews who also possess homophobic views, not quite as many, and I think most of them are probably living in Israel anyway. Yeah, they might, who would be have incredibly homophobic views. There's probably members of, I'm not saying there are members of Black Lives Matter that would have homophobic views, that there might well be, and there might be members of gay, the LGBTQ community, who might be racist or sexist or Islamophobic, anti-Semitic. I mean, it's fair, and what you've got to, that's why intersectionality is important, because you've got to take all these issues in mind, and when you're dealing with one prejudice, that's not an excuse to forget about the other prejudices.
I'm afraid you got a point there. I mean, I can go on about this for hours on end, but from personal experience, you kind of have to know your audience a little bit, which is one of the reasons why...
I just think our audience is the cool people.
Oh, yes, of course. We're badass, better than fucking Joe Rogan. He's no badass. We are, but going
liberal,
back...
progressivist, educated people and everything, who are maybe a bit middle class, I might think, but... I like to think that people who listen to what we say are educated, are progressivist, probably, which means we're probably preaching to the choir, but I mean, sometimes that's all you can, you don't have much choice but to do that, because some people are so far down a rabbit hole, you can't bring them out.
Well, unfortunately for me, I've got some crossover appeal as well, maybe not so much on certain ethnic data, but Americans who will probably watch and listen to this as well. I will sometimes say things just to fire them up, because you've got to realize, just because you're the most powerful country in the world doesn't mean everyone thinks like you. You could do whatever the hell you want. I'm getting a little bit off topic myself, but I know as I'm playing with my nasal inhaler almost like a cigar right now, I'm thinking of most recent examples like Noah, the Darren Aronofsky film, and then Jerry Springer.
That was quite good.
Which caused a shit storm.
I quite like that film, Noah film, actually. I think a lot of religious nuts were quite pissed off I didn't take the story of Noah, you know, literally enough, which is, you know, what do you expect, man? It's a pretty ridiculous story and everything. But, you know, Americans are actually quite lucky, again, because they've got their First Amendment, which, and they've got their separation of church and state, which means there is no blasphemy law in their country, and it's completely unenforceable. Do they take advantage of that shit? Do they bollocks? I mean, I've always said, I think France is doing people think America should do, because they both got their republic, both got a separation of church and state. Just France respects that separation a lot more stringently and won't tolerate any of that theocratic bullshit.
No, you're right there. With my many visits in France, I'll tell you that there's some of the hang-ups that you see in America, because I would say, as far as blasphemy and religion is concerned, in the States, the law says one thing, but the public doesn't always do another. And, it's also a regional sort of matter. Cities operate on a different level than the rural towns and villages and villages. I mean, you know, everyone likes to go on about New York. A lot of French people go to New York for some reason, you'll be surprised.
Closest thing to Paris, like America's got, I would have thought.
So they say. I'm more of a Los Angeles person, if you're talking about American big cities.
Well, I've been to LA, I've not been to New York, so I can't say one thing or the other, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, you are right, between you've got the more built-up areas and the rural. I mean, as I've mentioned, and you probably tell from my accent, well, you might be able to, I don't know. I come from rural Gloucestershire, a little village in Gloucestershire. Well, I won't give it its name out. And I don't wish to disparage the people there. There is a mixed bunch, but not so much complete rubes, but a lot of them can be, again, quite rural, and a lot of them aren't as well educated as, well, the likes of us. Oh God, if they hear this, I'm gonna have to, they're gonna murder me if I go back there. Not literally. They're not gonna be too happy with me saying this and everything, but yeah, a lot of them can be quite quite rural, and yes, a lot of them, majority of workplace voted Brexit. Although, to be fair, it's not, they're not particularly religious back then, but it is in places like that, due to people being less educated and therefore kept ignorant, that they are more likely to be in the thralls of religious dogma, which is where, like, you know, support for blasphemy laws is going to be most stringent. And but fortunately, the winds of change are blowing, and, you know, a lot of countries in Europe that did have blasphemy laws have since repealed them. It's like a set of dominoes there. They're all falling down eventually. It's going to be places like Russia that are going to keep them, because Russia is just like that, and it's going to, doesn't want to braid Western liberalism. Obviously, the Middle East is never going to abolish those blasphemy laws, or at least not in our lifetime. And a lot of those countries, if you do blaspheme, it's not just like a fine or jail time. It's the death penalty, either by stoning or beheading, as it is in Saudi Arabia.
I'm afraid so there. I mean, take it as you will. This may sound racist, but I don't want to be in parts of the world where I feel like I have to watch my back every moment. If it's not pickpocketers, it's the government. And I just don't find a lot of the laws surrounding women's rights, or if you say the wrong thing, they'll put you in prison. No, that's not for me. I don't even want to go to Israel, which is considered the most liberal Middle Eastern country in the world, because of the religious violence. In the same way, I don't want to go to Northern Ireland for the very same reasons. Now, that being said, however, like South America, for instance, you'll probably will see remnants of this old social order, because it's quite poor and there's a lot of corruption. And South America, like Italy and Hungary, are predominantly Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many parts of Central America and the Caribbean that are a little bit like that too. I know Jamaica, very homophobic, very sort of masculine type country. But if you say that, you're deemed a racist. This is a country founded mostly by black slave populations that were brought from West Africa to do the white man's laundry. And there is some theories about colonialism bringing these old age ideas and still it being filtered through the public, which is how you get places like Jamaica and Colombia, where homosexuality or abortion and women's rights are non-existent because the Spanish or the English colonized it, and they're too poor and too corrupt to do anything about it.
Which suddenly reminded me, I think, because we brought up Mary Whitehouse earlier and how we're all glad she's dead and everything, and we can't stop wanting to piss on her grave and everything because of her views. But of course, one person we still have in the UK and has pretty much been the kind of person who replaced her as this sort of ultra-religious, Bible-thumping, bigoted... Fuck me, can you read my mind or something?
Yes, I can. She was on a show called Clever Dicks, which sounds kind of pornographic to me.
Well, I think that's kind of a joke and everything. I don't know how she got so much bloody ones, but yeah, I mean, she... Oh, fuck that woman or everything. I mean, I remember one time I was watching one of those breakfast talk shows, debate flowers. This was a while back and everything. Her on one side and Richard Dawkins on the other about abolishing the blasphemy law. And of course, she was saying, well, we've had limits on free speech and everything, and people find us offensive. It's like, okay, A, whether or not we should have limits on free speech is in a debate, and B, if we must have limits of free speech, protecting your fucking imaginary friend is from offence is not what a legit one. And of course, Richard Dawkins said, well, I'm offended by things like backward baseball caps and chewing gum, admitting he is quite old. And yes, he is silent generation. He was born in the early 40s, so he is old as fuck. But I don't have laws passed against him. It's like, yeah, quite right. I mean, it's like, you just Why the f you can't just ban something because some prick finds it offensive? And you definitely, I would have thought actually during the Age of Enlightenment we'd have settled this conversation like all the way back then, but we're still going to have this stupid debate now. It's so ridiculous. I mean, obviously we don't now because we've finally abolished the blasphemy law, and I think it's the one good thing Gordon Brown actually did. Well, that and I suppose getting us out of Iraq. Well,
let me remind you something. Anne Widdecombe, God bless her, is almost from the same area as Nigel Farage and a lot of these right-wing MPs. Maidstone and the world. I live not too far from Maidstone, speaking at this moment. So and unlike Gloucester, say, you know, there are a lot of farmers and combine harvesters, and like people who watch the Aardman and trip hop songs or all that. Kent is full of Cockney East London peoples and posh middle class towns who think, oh, you cannot ban fox hunting. So you've got a bit of the worst elements of sort of East London chauvinism and that sort of snobbish middle class, upper class ideology. And it sort of conflates itself in a toxic combo and you've got Kent and the Medway.
Yeah. Pretty much doing...
You know, trust me, Kent is worse than Gloucestershire.
I don't doubt. I mean, the southwest, whilst the southeast is kind of Tory central, the southwest can be split between Tory and the Lib Dems. And I have my own problems with Lib Dems. One thing they've always been very good at is defending secularism. In fact, at the time of the 2015 election, it was surprising that not one but two leaders of main prominent parties, Nick Clegg of the Lib Dems and Ed Miliband of Labour, are both atheists. But on the subject of Anne Widdecombe, because as you may be aware, she's a Roman Catholic. She was originally an Anglican. But do you know the reason why she switched from Anglicanism to Catholicism?
Because of their views on gay marriage.
Nope.
Some more abortion.
Nope. Do you give up? Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, just go on.
The ordination of women. Basically, the Church of England started allowing women to be priests. And she said, oh, we can't have this. And of course, the Catholic Church still to this very day won't let women be priests because fucking hell, there just can't be cunts enough. And she said, well, a Catholic Church doesn't care if something's popular. It was like, you fucking stupid. No, I won't finish that sentence because it'll only become across as misogynist. And I shouldn't be, but oh, Anne Widdecombe, you are the original Karen.
No, she is a bitch. I mean, I'll say it for you.
Be careful with saying it. It can come almost a little incel misogynistic, but no. I think it's more more fitting to call her a Karen. And let's face it, she is the Uber Karen.
Absolutely. Well, people say that's a sexist slur nowadays. Sort of like short-haired white ladies who like to say, the black man rapes me. I'm going to call the police on you.
Well, to be honest, I mean, while it is grounded in progressivist terms, obviously challenging racism, the privilege of middle-class white women, used mostly by people of colour, mostly women of colour, and working-class women of colour, to express the bigotry that they have to suffer from these people, I can't help but thinking that white folk like myself and many of the circles I walk in have embraced the term quite wholeheartedly. And while we may disguise it as progressivism and fighting back against white privilege, a lot of them probably just looking at the excuse to delve in shameless misogyny, you know, and all that stuff. But that's a discussion for another podcast. We're talking about blasphemy here, and we could go on all fucking day regarding this, but blasphemy is a victimless crime. It is so ridiculous that people would still think that this invisible sky god that they worship needs to be protected from verbal harm and everything. I mean, we live in the 21st century. The concept of blasphemy just strikes me as superstitious. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. I don't know how much longer we can really take this podcast on for, Mark. Is there anything else you would like to add to it?
On my closing thoughts, I will say I know we go on about BBFC policy a lot, but MPAA doesn't have explicit requirements as to what you can say in regards to religion. You could even say, I hate God, he's a fucking idiot, in a PG-13 movie. What they'll likely do is list it as rated PG-13 for thematic elements and brief, strong language. And that's it. So on some level, like you said, because U.S. Constitution, First Amendment, it's not an issue. But the culture-wise, there'll be a lot of people like from Texas and Arkansas who go up in a tizzy because he said, God's a fucking idiot. You son of a bitch. You damn fool.
And they're just basically giving the film or the TV show or whatever extra publicity. So that's nice. So exactly. Certainly creators are happy for it. You carry on.
I mean, on personal experience, it doesn't bother me if someone says goddamn or Jesus Christ, Lord's name in vain. Although it's not something I would use quite openly around female members of my family. Jerry tends to be like your family. Tend to be a lot more conservative on certain things. I don't even talk about pornography in front of my mother. If I told her I've watched certain anime, especially my grandmother, they would look at me funny, so I have to keep it on the hush-hush. Here's the problem in society. You got to know your audience a bit. And for a very long time, I've always been ashamed of expressing myself too openly. There was even one time I got in trouble. Well, it wasn't Kingsman or anything, but it was like The Simpsons or something. There was an episode where they were mocking a cult, a religious group. It was called like the Joyous Sect, which I thought was funny, but some of the old audience members didn't take too kindly to some of the mockery of like Branch Davidians and Waco, Texas type organizations or Heaven's Gate.
Not as a lot of them.
Very weird.
But I always say, I mean, this is basically maybe a sign that you might want to think about the kind of circles you walk in, because ever since I've been to university, maybe a bit earlier actually, when I went to college in Bristol, I've been walking in particularly liberal progressivist circles, and of course that's probably helped me keep my mindset forward thinking. It's of course reinforced itself ever since I moved to Cardiff back in 2011, but yeah, I mean, there's not much to really add to that. That is what it is. That point is kind of self-explanatory.
Well, for you, you live in a more sort of metropolitan environment. Yes, Cardiff is smaller than London and Bristol, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, it is very metropolitan, though.
I've always lived in sort of rural suburban areas, so I don't have quite that luxury that let's say, you might have. So I'm always have to be a little bit guarded. That's one of the reasons why I've had to hide. I always talk about, I like women and stuff, but I've actually gotten a little bit of trouble in the past for saying I'd like Noel Fielding from Mighty Boosh and Bill Cowlitz from Tokyo Hotel because they look quite feminine. And I was mocked for it because they thought I was a F. I'm not going to say
right. That, but I know what you're getting at. So, I mean, again, the circles you walk in, you may want to reevaluate them. I suppose the only thing I can add, one thing I sign off to this and one thing I add is, if anyone's listening to this and you are a religious theocrat, be it Christian, Muslim, Jew, or fuck it, even a goddamn Hindu or Sikh who wants to basically feels like they have a right to force their views upon other people and say that you can't insult our religion and you even have to be punished for it, be that by death or just by prosecution or anything like that, so I have only one thing to say to you: go fuck yourself, seriously, really hard, and preferably die. No one will miss you.
I'll use the used to get version. Go home. Because they're really full of themselves sometimes, and leave that for the police and the army. I mean, they can be abusive, but you're not the judge during the execution on something like this, my friend. There's licensed people who can do that just for you. I wish I could say a little bit more. I know I was almost going to go on about anti-Semitism, like Triumph of the Will and sort of Jojo Rabbit, Borat sort of stuff. But I don't know if we even have the time, but you're more than welcome to add your thoughts, because anti-Semitism is blasphemy, mocking Jews and the Jewish faith. You know, everyone says, oh,
it's... True, it's two different forms, though. You can mock elements of a Jewish faith. And let's face it, if you ever mock any of the stories in the Old Testament or the Bible, which I have, fuck me, I have. I mean, let's face it, there's a lot to pick apart there. Yes, I mean, you're mocking the Jewish faith, because that's basically the Torah. There's a difference between that and spreading hatred towards Jewish people, like, obviously most egregiously the Nazis, but Mel Gibson, yeah, and anyone who's basically hated on the Jewish people and everything. So, yeah, there's differences. But I also think there's a difference between mocking Islam and hatred towards Muslims. Hey, you can mock Catholicism and not hate Roman Catholics. But again, people like these religious fundamentalists say the Pope is the Antichrist. I say the Pope is basically the head of a giant pedo ring. So, you know, make of that what you will.
Well, I won't call Pope Francis about that. I know it's a, you know, kind of compared to that Rowan Williams person, because he's a left-wing...
He's very progressivist and liberal, yes.
But that doesn't hide the fact that the Vatican has always been problematic as far as...
Really? You think?
No shit. That's why I don't like Italians that much. And yes, that goes on to issues of xenophobia.
I've got a lot of Italian friends, and I've also even had it... Well, sort of an Italian girlfriend at one point, but that's neither here nor there or anything.
But yeah, it's just a stereotype I grew up on that, oh, gotta be careful, those Italians, they, it's offensive. Yes, I know it, but I used to assume that they always slap their wives, but then pray before going to work, or they would talk a little like this and tell the bambino, if you're gay, get in the bush and get out of the house. And then they would pray again, and... Yeah, it's old stereotypes. You probably see like mafia movies or something.
Yeah, sorry. Very probably very. Yeah, I don't think those stereotypes are legit, but you know, obviously some people will probably, you can't get them to stop seeing the world in stereotypes as much as you try. Anywho, yeah, I think that's about that. Shall we call it there? Call it a day there?
Yep, and for anyone watching, stay tuned and make sure to stay alive during these harsh times. Until then.
And again, all you religious bigots, go fuck yourself. Everyone who's not a religious bigot, stay cool. All right, signing off.